The third parak has a lot of very halacha lemaisa issues as it relates to Chol HaMoed, starting off with Mishnah Aleph, the ability or the prohibition to take haircuts and shave on Chol HaMoed, and Mishnah Beis going on to doing fisa, doing laundry on Chol HaMoed, and then we get into Mishnah Gimel, Mishnah Dalet, writing on Chol HaMoed, etc. Just to start off with Mishnah Aleph and Mishnah Beis, by way of introduction, Chazal decreed that it's not permitted to take haircuts, to shave on Chol HaMoed, and also Mishnah Beis to not do laundry. And the rationale was, if it's permitted, and fundamentally it is permitted because that would be Letzorech HaMoed, making sure that we are well-groomed and well-dressed for Chol HaMoed and Yontif, but Chazal were concerned that if it's permitted to do so during Chol HaMoed, people very easily may push off these activities to Chol HaMoed when they have more time. And that would be a disgrace for Chol HaMoed, people pushing off getting their haircuts and shaving specifically on Chol HaMoed and not doing so beforehand coming into Yontif, and not doing their laundry to have clean clothing going into Yontif, rather deferring it to Chol HaMoed. So we are going to talk about in Mishnah Aleph the prohibition of haircuts, Mishnah Bej, the prohibition of laundry, but when is it permitted? There were certain circumstances, and we'll start off with Mishnah Aleph about taking haircuts and shaving. There are certain circumstances that if somebody was not able to take the haircut or to take a shave before Yontif, then they would be permitted to during Chol HaMoed. Or there are certain times that, in fact, it's a mitzvah to get a haircut on a specific day, and if that day falls during Chol HaMoed, that also will be permitted. So we're going to start off with the mission of Eilu Megalchim HaMoed. There are certain categories of people who are permitted to take haircut, shave during Chol HaMoed, because either something happened that enabled them to do so during Chol HaMoed because they were not able to before the Chag, or because that event happened right before the Chag but did not enable them to have enough time to get that haircut before Yontif started. So Ve'ilu Megalchim B'Moed, these are the people that can take haircuts on Chol HaMoed. Haba Medina Sayam, somebody who arrived from a long travel, came from overseas, arrived either right before Yontif or arrived during Chol HaMoed, so could not get that haircut beforehand. Umebeis Hashivya, somebody who was held in captivity, got out right before Yontif started or during Chol HaMoed. Vayotze Mebeis Asurim, somebody who got out of prison, either right before Yontif, didn't have time, or during Chol HaMoed. Or v'hamenuda shehi tiru lo chachamim, somebody who was in nidui, somebody who was in excommunication by a beis din, that person is not permitted to either take haircuts or, as we'll see in Mishnah Beis, also to do laundry. So that person was permitted now, was let out of that nidui during Chol HaMoed, that person would be permitted to also take that haircut or right before Chol HaMoed and didn't have time right before. And in addition, somebody who made a vow not to cut his hair, and during Chol HaMoed is only when he found somebody to be matzir, his neder, to permit him to open that neder, to get rid of that neder so it's not binding. So he was not able to take that haircut before Chol HaMoed, and only now during Chol HaMoed that chacham, he was nishal chacham, he had a chacham, a sage, annul that vow. Now he is permitted to take that haircut during Chol HaMoed. And continuing, a couple examples of people that have a mitzvah to shave, to take a haircut specifically on a given date, and if it falls on Chol HaMoed, it's permitted for them to do so. V'hanazir, somebody who was a nazir, and the term of the nazirus ended during Chol HaMoed. For example, somebody accepted upon himself nazirus for 30 days. It ends on the second day of Chol HaMoed, third day of Chol HaMoed. It's a mitzvah to get a haircut on at that time. And similarly, v'hamitzora ha'ula mituma solatara. So if we have a mitzora who is going from tame to tahor, from impure to pure, going through the process of purification as a result of tzaras, and part of that is on the first and seventh days of that process, he cuts his hair, so that would be permitted even on Chol HaMoed. Mishnah Beis, there's also a prohibition, as we mentioned, to do laundry during Chol HaMoed, because Chazal were concerned people would defer doing their laundry from before Yontif to Chol HaMoed. So unless it's a permitted category of those who can do laundry, the default is it's prohibited to do so on Chol HaMoed. The Eidu Mechapsim B'Moed, these are those who are permitted. These are the categories, and it's going to start out identical to the list that we saw in the prior Mishnah for those who can get haircuts. So we won't go into all the details. Habama Medina Sayam, somebody who was traveling and arrived either right before Yom Tov or during Chol HaMoed from a travel, didn't have time to do the laundry. Similarly, Mibes HaShivya, somebody who got out of captivity. Vayotze Mibes HaSrim, somebody let out of a prison. Vahamenuda Shitiru Lo Chachamim, somebody who was under a ban, under a cherim, under a nidoy, and was permitted out of that ban, out of that nidoy, out of that cherim, either right before Yontif or during Chol HaMoed. So none of these are categories of people who could have done their laundry before Yontif started. V'chein misha nisha l'chacham v'hutar, somebody who made an oath that he's not going to do laundry, and he was only able to have that annulled by a chacham during Chol HaMoed. And now we have some new items, categories on the list. We're going to see three different examples of types of clothing items, mostly going to be towels that get dirty immediately, and accordingly, because they're constantly getting dirty, it's permitted to wash them during Chol HaMoed. Mitbechos hayadayim, cloth napkins, literally towels that are used with the hands. Cloth napkins, you touch yourself, you try to wipe yourself at a meal with a cloth napkin, it is dirty immediately. Umitbachot hasaparim, these are the towels, the covers used by barbers that they use when they cover people when cutting their hair. We have certain categories of people who are permitted to take haircuts and shaves on Chol HaMoed. Accordingly, when the barber would do so, those towels covering the people would get dirty immediately. So there's constantly turnover. They need to be washed. Umitbachot hasfag, these are bath towels. Towels used in the mikveh, as soon as you start using it, they get dirty. And another similar category would be the clothing of young children. It's not listed here, but that's how we paskin l'halacha, the clothing of small children, because they soil it constantly and immediately. It is permitted to wash that during Chol HaMoed when they are needed for Chol HaMoed or Yontif. And now we have a list of various people that, although grown up, they constantly soil their clothing because they have various emissions coming from their body. So vahazavin, somebody who has the tumah of a zav, vahazavos, that's a woman who has a certain type of tumah, vahanidos, a woman who's menstruating, vayolados, a woman who gave birth recently, all of them, because of various flows from the body, soil their clothing very regularly, and accordingly, it's permitted for them to wash the clothing because they need it for Chol HaMoed and Yontif. And similarly, v'chol ha'olim mitumah letara, those who are going from a tumah to tahara, they did not have the ability to wash the clothing before Yontif started, so they are permitted to wash their clothing during Chol HaMoed, Hare'elu Mutarin, all of these categories that we listed, they are permitted. However, Usha'ar Kol Adam Asurim, anyone else not listed on the aforementioned list, says the Mishnah, is prohibited to do laundry on Chol HaMoed. Mishnah Gimel, as we've mentioned before, the default is Malacha is prohibited on Chol HaMoed. That would include writing. Writing is prohibited on Chol HaMoed unless it is permitted for specific reasons, two very primary. The primary reasons are if it's tzorchei moed, you have a real need on Chol HaMoed for writing, or davar ha'avit, to avoid a loss, that would permit writing also. So our Mishnah is going to give us a list of the times, the classifications, categories, when it is permitted indeed to write on Chol HaMoed. So the Mishnah says, Ve'elu kosvim b'moed, these are those who are permitted to write on Chol HaMoed. Kiddushei nashim, if somebody wants to betroth a woman, there are three ways to do that, as we learn in the Mishnah in Kiddushin, and one of them is to give her a shtar, a written document, so it's permitted to have that shtar written, and therefore to get betrothed to a woman on Chol HaMoed. And the rationale is because if you don't do it, some other man may come along, and may win the prize of getting engaged to the lovely woman. So accordingly, grab the opportunity. That would be a tremendous davar ha'aved if the man would lose getting engaged to that woman to somebody else. Next is gittin, a get. The reason here is we're talking about a man is planning to go on a travel, a very dangerous travel, and he's not so certain he's going to be coming back. So in order to avoid the situation of his disappearing and leaving his wife as an aguna, he would write a get in advance, and he's leaving, so this is the opportunity. Vishovarin, if we have a borrower who is willing to repay a loan right now, but he's only willing to repay if he gets a receipt from the lender that evidences that he has been repaid, we should grab that opportunity. Who knows if that borrower is going to be willing or able to pay. He may be going on a trip right now, and he won't be around after Chol HaMoed. So accordingly, it's permitted to write that receipt. The lender would write the receipt, evidencing he had repayment. Daitiki is a gift given by somebody who is very seriously ill, about to pass away. So he wants to give a gift to somebody that can be written. This may be the last opportunity. Matana, somebody who's willing to give a gift of real estate to somebody, that can be evidence because that person may otherwise change the mind on giving the gift. Now's the opportunity right now. Upruzbalin. Upruzbal is a document that when a Shemitah year comes around, the end of the Shemitah year, it wipes out loans that happened prior to then. So that, it unfortunately acts as a bar. It prevents lenders from giving loans to people as the Shemitah approaches because they may not get repaid in time and they would not be able to collect. So what a prusbol is it was instituted that if somebody writes a prusbol and gives it to a beis din, the beis din holds on to that. The Shemitah, when it comes around at the end of the Shemitah year, it would not wipe out the loans that are held by beis din. And then the lender can collect on that even after the end of the Shemitah year, acting effectively as an agent by the beis din. So that prusbol can be written during Chol HaMoed because afterwards it may be difficult to find an appropriate beis din to officiate and hold on to that prusbol. Igra shum is an appraisal by the beis din. If somebody wants to collect, the lender wants to collect on a loan that he gave and he's going to collect from a borrower's property, the beis din comes in and appraises the value of the property to know how much the lender can collect from it. So that can be done now. Who knows if you can collect at a later date. The igras mazon. If somebody commits to support another person, for example, somebody is getting married to a woman and it's her second marriage, and an example would be she has a daughter from the prior marriage and the new husband is committing that he's going to support her to a certain level, it would be permitted to evidence that in writing. In addition, shtari chalitza, if there's a chalitza that should be evidenced in writing, do it promptly. That yibum was not done by the brother-in-law of somebody who passed away, but rather he did chalitza. That can be written down to evidence that there was a chalitza or a meunin. A meun is a concept that a father has the alpi Torah has the right to marry off his daughter, even if she's below the age of bas mitzvah. But Chazal instituted that if the father is no longer around, then either the mother or the brother can marry her off underage, but she has a right, come her bas mitzvah, to refuse the man, and she doesn't even need a get. But what they would do is they would make a certificate, a shtar of meyun, that she is a free agent, she has refused this man, and she has no further ties to him, so she would be permitted to marry anyone else. And last, Ushtare Beirurin, almost last, Ushtare Beirurin is an arbitration agreement. Once people agree to the various dayanim that will act on a tribunal as a beis din in front of them, they would be able to sign the arbitration agreement, which it would list out the three acceptable dayanim that will serve on the beis din in front of them, gzeiras beis din, and any gzeira decrees, decisions of a beis din should be written promptly so it's not forgotten. So do it so it can be done even during Chol HaMoed. The igros shel reshus, different explanations what this mean. It could be a declaration or a decision by a government, or it can be even social letters between friends would be permitted to be written on Chol HaMoed because it does increase the simcha of yontif. And also a concept we've seen in the past, it's not written in a professional manner because it's just a social letter, it's more casual, so that would be permitted to be written as well on Chol HaMoed. Mishnah Dalet continues the halachas of not writing on Chol HaMoed. Mishnah Dalet ain't kosvin shtari chov b'moed. We don't write loan documents on Chol HaMoed. A loan would be acceptable, but without writing the document. So if the borrower and lender trust each other more, the lender trusts the borrower that will write it after Chol HaMoed, after Yontif ends, then he can give the loan, but don't write the loan agreement. However, if the lender doesn't trust the borrower, he doesn't want to give the loan without having his signature that the money has been lent. The borrower needs the money on Chol HaMoed, or maybe the borrower is concerned he's not going to be able to get a loan after Yontif ends. In that situation, it would be permitted to write the loan document, to sign the loan document. And another time that would be permitted, O She'ein Lo Ma Yochal, if the sofer, the scribe who is writing the loan document, needs money for Chol HaMoed, he needs to buy food, even if the borrower and lender would be okay waiting or doing it without a loan document, but the sofer, the scribe, needs money for Chol HaMoed, for Yontif, Hareza Yichtov, even in that situation, it would be permitted to write the loan documents. Continuing, other times that it's not permitted, even when it's Letzorach HaMitzvah, in Kotzvim Sfarim, we don't write Sifrei Torah, so a scribe cannot write a Sefer Torah, Tfilin u'mezuzos, Tfilin, mezuzos, b'moed an Chol HaMoed, ve'ein megin os achas, and we can't even correct one letter if we don't need that Sefer Torah, or whatever other Sifrei Kodesh, for Chol HaMoed in Yontif, you have other Sifrei Torah, etc. Afilu b'sefer ha'azor, and this would be the case even for the Sefer Torah that the Kohen Gadol would read on Yom Kippur for all of Klal Yisrael, an absolute Torah HaRabim, it would not be permitted even to fix that Sefer Torah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda is of the view, Kosev Adam, Tfilin and Mezuzos La'atzmo, that it's permitted for a sofer to write Tfilin and Mezuzos for himself. In other words, this is Letzorach Mitzvah, and he needs it on Chol HaMoed. It's talking about somebody who would have the minhag to wear Tfilin. In Eretz Yisrael, that is not the minhag, so this would not be permitted in many other places as well. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's a very strong minhag not to wear Tfilin, so it would not be permitted. But somebody who does have that minhag, it would be permitted, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to write it for your own needs, to write tefillin and mezuzos, but not to sell, not for other needs. And in addition, if somebody needs tzitzis and he has tcheles, then he would need, but he doesn't have the tcheles spun. In other words, he needs to prepare from wool the thread of tcheles for his tzitzis. V'tova al yirecho tcheles letzitziaso. He's permitted to spin it, but he has to do it in an unusual way, literally on his thigh. In other words, don't spin it in the normal way between your fingers or with a spindle or whatever other tools are used for that. Do it in an unusual way if it's being done on Chol HaMoed. From Mishnah Hay through the end of the parak, we'll have a detailed discussion of the halachas of Avelus, of mourning, as it pertains to Chol HaMoed and Yontif. So just on a high level, to go through the various stages of the Avelus, of the mourning process, when somebody has a close relative pass away, Lo Aleinu, 7 close relatives, father, mother, bring the most severe, as we'll see, that the Avelus continues for an entire year, not only for Shiva and Shloshim. So father, mother, brother, sister, son, daughter, or spouse, those are the seven close relatives. From the Kfura, the Shiva begins 7 days of mourning, being the most strict days of the mourning, and there are various halachot and minhagim as it pertains to those days. And we'll just go through a few of them. One is not permitted to wash, to take showers, to anoint oneself with oil. No laundry can be done, not only washing laundry, but wearing clean clothing. It's somewhat like Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. We don't wear shoes. We don't wear leather shoes. Marital relations is forbidden. Also, there is a prohibition of working, especially during the first 3 days during the Shiva. It's prohibited for the Avel to work even when there is a need. Shela Shalom, we don't greet an Avel. The Avel doesn't greet other peoples as well. We don't say Shalom Aleichem. No learning of Torah that brings a Simcha. And there is no haircuts, shaving for men. That's all prohibited during the Shiva. Some of those continue into the Shloshim in particular, not getting haircuts or shaving. Also not having Simcha, going to parties, social events, listening to music. That all continues through the Shloshim, and for a mother and father, that will continue through Yud Bet Chodesh, through the year. So that's that's the high view of the various levels of the Avelus during the year. And the first Mishnah we're going to talk about is if the Shiva or the Shloshim begins before a Chag, for example, before the first day of Sukkot or the first day of Pesach, what happens, what impact does that have on the Shiv and Shlofis stream when the Chag begins? So the Mishnah starts out as follows: Hakover es meiso shlosha yamim kodem l'regel. If somebody literally buries a close relative, we're talking about one of the seven close relatives that we aforementioned, and it was that the Shiva began at least 3 days prior to the beginning of the Chag. If that's the situation, batla himenu gzeira shiva. When the Chag comes, the gzeira, the decree of shiva, is canceled. In other words, all of the halachas and the requirements of the shiva that don't apply in the shloshim, those would be wiped out. So the shiva ends right then. If you kept 3 days of shiva, that's what the Mishnah says. That's not halacha lamaisa. Halacha lamaisa is that even if you kept a very short amount of time of the shiva avelus, even if you just sat down quickly on a low stool or something, you sowed some form of avelus, that would be a sufficient amount of sitting shiva that once the Chag happens, then the shiva would be canceled. Even if you just take off the leather shoes, you do something of that nature. In fact, that's what we see, even not related to a holiday, not a Chag, but if somebody is buried and it's close to Shkia, that the family will simply sit at the cemetery very quickly before the sun sets, and that will count as the first day. So that's the same concept as we are discussing here, that halacha lamais, as long as you sit, as long as you sow some form of velus before the Chag begins, that would be sufficient halacha lamais, and not like our Mishnah that requires 2 days, even just a short amount of time, the Chag would wipe out the Shiva. Now, continuing according to the Mishnah, Shmona, if it's now Erev Yontif, is the eighth day. In other words, the Shiva completed, and now it's the eighth day. In other words, it's the first day of the Shloshim. Shloshim has begun. Accordingly, Batla Himenu Gzeira Shloshim. Now the Chag starts. That cancels out the Gezeira of Shloshim, the decree of Shloshim. In other words, the Halachas of Shloshim. The Shloshim, as long as you did a little bit of the Shloshim, just like you did a little bit of the Shiva, that would be a sufficient amount. Now, halacha lamaisa, we don't paskin like this again. Halacha lamaisa, we're more lenient that even if the Shiva, the last day of the Shiva is on the Erev Chag, in other words, it's not the day before the Erev Chag, it's not that the eighth day after the Kfura is Erev Chag, but the seventh day after the Kfura is the Erev Chag, that day counts as both the seventh day of the Shiva and also the first day of the Shloshim, such that if the Shloshim begins on the seventh day after the Kfura, that will wipe out the Shloshim as well. And the Mishnah now tells us the major concept that we're dealing with. Mibnei Sha'amru, Chazal told us, Shabbos Ola Be'inom Afsekes. When it comes to Shabbos, every Shiva is going to have a Shabbos in it. So the Shabbos, the day of Shabbos, counts as one of the days of the Shiva. There aren't outward signs of avelus on Shabbos, but there is avelus bitzina, for example. We don't wash as an avel, doesn't wash even on Shabbos, doesn't have marital relations. So that day counts as one of the days of Shiva, Be'enam Afsekes. However, the Shabbos does not cancel out the Shiva. Then we would never have a Shiva, 7 days of mourning, because there's always going to be a Shabbos. Eventually, it's going to cancel something out. So that's the status of Shabbos. But when it comes to Regalim, and we'll just focus right now on Sukkot and Pesach, we'll talk about the other Regalim a little bit later in the Perek. When it comes to those, the Regalim Mafsikin, they are Mafsik, they cancel out the Shiva, the Einam Olim, and they don't count as part of the Shiva because they canceled out the Shiva. Mishnah Vav continues our discussion of the various regalim, the various yantivs, and their impact on the Shiva. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer is of the view, Mishachara Beis HaMikdash, once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Atzeres, which is Shavuos, Kishabbos, is treated like Shabbos, that it doesn't cancel the Shiva. What's going on here, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is that when we had the Beis HaMikdash, the various special karbanos on Shavuos that were brought could be brought not only Shavuos, but the next 6 days as well. So in a certain respect, Shavuos was 7 days. So accordingly, Shavuos was just like Sukkot and Pesach, that when it coincided with the Shiva, if the Shiva falls at a time and is broken by the Chag, that would apply not only by Pesach and Sukkot, but it would be canceled by Shavuos as well. But after the time of the Beis HaMikdash, where Shavuos is for certain only one day, Chutz La'aretz is only 2 days, but it doesn't have the concept of continuing for a total of 7, 6 after the Chag, then Atzeres is going to be treated, Shavuos is going to be treated just like Shabbos, that it will not cancel the Shiva. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, he says, Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim k'regalim, he's talking about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, those are going to be like the regalim, that in fact they would cancel the Shiva. So that's Rabbi Gamliel's view. And now Chachamim Omrim, they're going to disagree with both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Gamliel, and this is in fact how we paskin lo kedivrei zeh v'lo kedivrei zeh. Chachamim are of the view, not like Rabbi Eliezer, not like Rabbi Gamliel, Ela Atzeres Kiragalim, even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Shavuos is just like the other regalim, so all of the Shalosh regalim equally cancel the Shiva. So if somebody sits Shiva, even for a short amount of time, right in front, before Shavuos begins, just like Pesach and Sukkot, even though Shavuos in Eretz Yisrael is just one day, that will indeed act to cancel the Shiva. So all the Shalosh Regalim are treated the same, and they have the same effect. And Chachamim continue, Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim k'Shabbos, both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are like Shabbos, that indeed they do not cancel the Shiva. It simply counts as one of the days, or for Rosh Hashanah, two of the days of the Shiva. So you keep on counting throughout, but it certainly does not cancel, just like Shabbos doesn't cancel, because Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are fundamentally not days of Simcha, so they don't act as the Shalosh Regalim, which are days of Simcha, and they do cancel the Shiva. Mishnah Zayin discusses various other halachas, minhagim, as it applies to the time that the Kfura happens, when the Mace, the person who passed away, is buried, and some of them in Hagim thereafter. So just on a high level, there is a halacha of kriya, rending our garments, and it applies basically in three different categories of people. Number one is close relatives, the 7 close relatives, they have a chiyuv to rip kriya. Typically it's done at the time of death or right before the actual kvura. Or number two, somebody whose Rebbe, who is his Rebbe Muvak, that he knows the majority of his Torah from, would also rip Kriya. And in addition, those who are present when the person passes away, on all of those there's a chiyuv to rip Kriya on the garment. So the Mishnah tells us when this happens on Chol HaMoed, Ein Korin, we do not rip our garments. V'lacholtzin, there was also a minhag at the time of Chazal for the men to bare their shoulders, to pull the clothing off the shoulders, another form, sign of avelus. And number three, ve'ein mavrin, we also don't have the su'udas havra'a, which is the first meal that the avelim have after the kfura, when they are fed by neighbors or others who are close to them, so they bring the meal for them. So in all of those three examples of the kriya, of the exposing the shoulder, and the sudas havra, ela krovav shalmeis, the only ones who participate in those events are those who are required to mourn. Ela krovav shalmeis, so those close relatives of the mace, they do the kriya. Other people are prohibited to do the kriya. We don't show avelus on Chol HaMoed unless it's necessary. V'lacholtzin, nowadays we don't do this anyway. Bearing the shoulders and the sudas havra would be limited to those close relatives. And in addition, ve'in mavrin ela almita zakufa, we also, all year round, there was a halacha that when you had the sudas havra, they would turn over their chairs, their couches that they would sit on, and the avelim, and those eating with the avelim would eat in that fashion. Our contemporary example would be eating on lower chairs. So the Mishnah is telling us that those who happen to be eating with the sudas havra, with the avelim who are required in it, only the avelim would sit on the overturned couches and nobody else. Now we're going to talk about a halacha that applies all year round, not only Chol HaMoed, when bringing that Seudas Havra to the house of the avelim, wherever the avelim are going to have that first meal after the Gfura, Ein Molichin LeBeis HaEvel, Lo Betavla, we don't bring that food, that Seudas Havra, to the house, the place that they're sitting Shiva. We shouldn't bring it on a tavla, which is a tray, a nice tray, an expensive tray, V'lo Be'iskutla, or a silver bowl, V'lo Be'kanon, or not in a fancy basket, Ela B'salim, a simple basket, for example, woven basket, something like that, so we don't embarrass people who don't have expensive items. So if we have some people bringing fancy things and some not, those who don't have should would be embarrassed. So we see here the sensitivity of Chazal and the halacha of being very modest in how we act, and we shouldn't embarrass people who have modest means. So that's a very beautiful lesson to come out of this Mishnah, continuing back as it relates to Chol HaMoed. After the Kvura itself, we have various minhagim and halachas, but they are somewhat different when it comes to Chol HaMoed. Vein omrim birkas avelim b'moed. At the time of Chazal, this is not our minhag anymore. They used to say a bracha to the avelim, so that is not done on Chol HaMoed, because we want to diminish the outward signs of avelus. Aval omdim b'shura menachmi. Nonetheless, there was, and we have a similar minhag today, that at the time of Chazal, how it was done is that the avelim would stand in one place and everyone would file by. They would walk by them and give them consolation. Nowadays, our minhag is different. We stand in two rows facing each other, and the avelim walk between the two rows. Then it was somewhat the opposite, with the avelim standing and everyone passing by the avelim. That indeed would be done even on Chol HaMoed, but thereafter, with poetry and sarabim, we would send everyone home. This would not be that we would go on to the Birkas Avelim and accompany the avelim home to the Beis HaAvel. That would not be the case on Chol HaMoed. We want to make it a quick process and everyone is sent home, because indeed it is still a chag that should be celebrated by the non-Avelim. Then the Avelim would go home, and they would also have the Chag, but it would be somewhat different. They'd have the Sudas Hovra, although much more limited than it would have been otherwise had it not been Chol HaMoed. Mishnah Ches, as we mentioned, we're trying to limit the outward signs of Avelus on Chol HaMoed, certainly when they be in public. So our Mishnah is going to discuss specifically going to the Kfura. How was that done? So the Mishnah says, "Ein manichim es hamita berachov." We don't leave out the mace, the person who passed away, out in the open, in the literally the street. As the time of Chazal, they used to have a procession going to the actual Kfura. They used to stop on the way, and they used to put the stretcher down that the mace was on. Nowadays, we use coffins. They didn't use coffins back then, so the body was simply wrapped, and more like an Eretz Yisrael, where the body is simply wrapped, not in a coffin. And they would put the body down along the way and have eulogies out in the open, stopping as a procession, stop, a eulogy, continue, procession, etc. So on Chol HaMoed, they did not used to put the body down at all. Shalol hargil hesped, to not bring on hespedim. Hespedim are prohibited on Chol HaMoed. So they said, don't even put the stretcher down, because that would bring on hespedim. Continuing, v'lonat shal nashim la'olam. Now, when it came to women, this is not even talking about Chol HaMoed, but all year round, they would not put down the stretcher upon which a mace, a woman who is deceased, was on, because it would not be respectful to her. And then continuing with Chol HaMoed, we said that we don't have hespedim, we have to limit the outward signs of avelus, of mourning. Nonetheless, certain signs, certain ways of avelus, as was done at the time of Chazal, were permitted, but other which were too much of a sign, of an outward sign of avelus, were either prescribed, limited, or prohibited. So it says as follows, Nashim b'moed me'anos. It would be permitted even on Chol HaMoed for women to chant together. Me'anos, will define that more in the next Mishnah, but this was a way of a sign of mourning that the women, men could do it also. It was just more normal for the women to do it at that time. During Chol HaMoed, they could do me'anos, that chant together, avalo metapchos, but they would not be permitted to clap their hands together. That was another sign of avelus. Rabbi Shmuel omer hasmuchos lemita min betapchos. Rabbi Shmuel agrees fundamentally you shouldn't be doing this clapping as a sign of grief, but those who are closest to the body, they would be permitted to clap, but otherwise those who are a little bit farther away would not be permitted to clap. Mishnah Tes continues discussing the halachas of the Kfura and the related eulogies, the related forms of mourning at the Kfura on specific days. Before in Mishnah Ches, we were talking about Chol HaMoed. Mishnah Ches, now we talk about Beroshe Chodesh, Iman Rosh Chodesh, b'Chanukah, b'Purim, on these 3 days, me'anos u'metapchots, it's permitted indeed to chant, the chanting form of mourning, u'metapchots, and also the clapping is also permitted on these days. They're not as strict as we talked about on Chol HaMoed. However, bazeh u'bazeh, when it comes to all of these days, bazeh is Chol HaMoed, and u'bazeh is talking about Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, and Purim, lo mekonenos, we can't do kinui, kina, which is a more intense form of chanting. So it's more than ma'anos. Ma'anos is all the women chanting together, and as we'll see in a little bit, mekonenos is when there's a ringleader, there's one woman who's leading, and the other women are responsive. So it's a lot more intense of a chanting than the me'anos. So nikbar ha'meis, once the body has been buried, so the kvura has happened, lo me'anos v'lo metapchos, the inui, the chanting, the clapping, all of this has to come to an end because it is a special day, be it on Chol HaMoed or Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, and Purim. And now we're going to describe ezehu inui, what is the inui that is a less intense form of chanting, and then we'll get to what is the kina that is a more intense form. So ezui kinoi, as we mentioned, shukulam onas ka'achas, all the women or men as well separately, they would be chanting kina. What is that more intense form? Sha'achas medaberes v'kulan onos achareha, when one would be leaning it and the others would be responsive in the chanting. And we have that as discussed in a pasuk in Yeshayahu she'ne'amar v'lamedna b'noseichem nehi v'isha re'usa kina, and it literally means that you should teach your daughters to lament, and each woman shall teach her friends kina. Kina is the word mekonanos. That is the kina that we're talking about, the more intense chanting. And we see here that one woman would teach the others. So that's the responsive form of chanting. Nenaucha, just end off on a positive note. The Masechta Aval Asid Lavo Huomer, in the future, another pasuk from Yeshayahu, it says, Bila Hamavis Lanetzach, Umacha Adnus Hashem Dima Me'al Kolpanim, that in the future, Bezras Hashem, death will be eliminated forever. Hashem Elokim HaKadosh Baruch Hu will erase tears from all faces. So that should be the bracha, that the Avelus shall cease Bimhira B'yameinu.